Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Do you live in London now?
Over Putney.
Okay, right, yeah.
So then I'm moving.
He's a speller neighbour.
Sorry?
He's a speller neighbour.
Oh, are you? You live near Marcus? Have you seen him around?
No, apart from that night we were
at Fulham, didn't we?
We were at Fulham, yeah.
And he was there.
Yeah, so
okay. But you're moving, you were saying?
Yeah, I'm only moving about 300 yards. I'm actually going to be moving to Fulham.
Okay,
so
you're coming to a bit of money. Have you spoke to him about the fee for this, have you?
Not that big.
Okay, Saturday afternoon sees Real Madrid take on Atletico at the Bernabeu, which is always a huge game. Both of you have written about the fixture ahead of this one. David, you've spoken about the repetition of Atletico's muscle injuries. I believe they've had 12 this season, yep, and 7 since December. I also believe Kieran Trippier may miss out and João Felix has been ruled out too, and Koke is still recovering. Regular listeners would, I hope, be au fait with Diego Simeone's methods and what he expects from his squad. But can you give us further context around the injuries they're suffering and how it's affected their season?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say it's probably been going on for about 2 years now. And Professor Ortega, who had a lot of adulation for how he used to prepare Atleti and when they were successful, that attitude that they played with, the energy that they played with, their fitness levels. But it's gone off the boil somewhat. I know they changed their pre-season plans, their pre-season preparation 2 years ago. And since then, things have
been... To make it lighter or to make it heavier?
Sorry?
Before they changed it to the preseason to make it lighter or heavier?
Heavier. And also a bit more travel involved as well. And I think it's hurt a lot of the players. And I think in terms of recovery, they aren't as careful as they once were. They're pushing players a little bit too much. And you see it harming the new players. And this is why João Felix has gone down again. This is about his fourth injury since, let's say, mid-October.
Right. I understand there'll probably be some kind of adjustment period for players coming in. But Andy, we've talked a lot about the kind of, maybe a bit prematurely, about the death of Chelisimo and all this stuff about how long it can be sustained seriously, because he has to turn over players quite a lot and bring them in, and they have to be certain types of players who can fit the system. And, you know, someone like Thomas Lemar has struggled badly.
He's always the one, isn't he?
Yeah. What's the upshot here? I mean, what's going to happen next?
The thing is, I think in many other situations you'd be saying maybe this is the natural end of where Simeone at Atletico is.
But this is about the fourth time you've said that on this show.
Exactly, but you think about it, he signed a new contract relatively recently. He's all in when he already had the opportunity to be out, which I think is quite interesting. Mm. He has kind of, I think, tried to make a soft landing for himself by saying at regular intervals throughout this season, it's a transitional season. It's a transitional season. That would be so much easier to sell if Barcelona and Real Madrid weren't at both at least in partial transition themselves.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, for most of this season, Atletico have been within striking distance of the top, but not quite close enough, but not quite with the cutting edge to put away close games.
They find it hard to compete on the level that they used to.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to convince themselves that they are still the same team. And I think if they maybe accepted it, that they aren't any longer the team, I think things might improve for them. But they seem to still have... I think they have an identity crisis there. They are now an elite club, but they still act as if they're underdogs.
Yeah,
and this is the problem they have. They're in a conflict between that. How do we play? How do we set up? Do we take the initiative in games, or do we sit back now?
Well, how did they play, David? If you talk about the last few years and the success we've seen them have with Champions League finals and good performances in La Liga, how do they play now when compared to those golden years, if you like?
This is going to sound very strange, but I think it's even more negative and defensive than they once were.
Right.
Now, people...
Do we judge them by the sort of players they have?
I think the players, they've improved. I think if you look at the squad is better in terms of talent. Yeah. But the figures that they have lost were so big and so influential in other ways.
Yeah.
I think the key moment was, for me, not losing Godin to Inter in the summer. It was, for me, when Gabby went.
Yeah.
He was...
After the Europa League final.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was Simeone's general on the field. If Simeone had an image of him on the field, it was Gabby. And you take him out the team and you see things are so, so different.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, how Gabby ended up coaching the team when he was off the field, when he'd been substituted or injured.
The old John Terry.
Yeah.
Doing the old John Terry.
In a slightly less obnoxious way.
Okay, right, okay.
Did you think that was good? I mean, when you said they're even more negative, I mean, before that happened, did you think that was possible?
I didn't know. I didn't think they could possibly do that. It's strange. And like I say, this conflict, what they have, they, you know, for me, I don't think Simeone realises the attacking players that he now has. He has João Félix, he has Thomas Lemar. He could maybe free them up a little bit, but he hasn't done that. Instead, they're still restricted by the same duties as before, and they should be allowed a bit more liberation, I think. And that's the problem they have. I think... He should have developed as a coach a bit more. He should have changed.
Do you think he's a bit of a one-trick pony then?
Yeah, he is. He is. It's crazy to say because nobody wants to criticize him too, and the Atleti fan base is very, you know, pride, passion, Atleti until the end, Simeone, you know, until he dies sort of thing. But they need to accept the criticism is okay to have an open conversation about what's gone wrong. He hasn't developed as a coach. He hasn't developed the team, and some of the players haven't been developed properly. Guys like Saul. Completely stagnant. A few years ago, he was looking like one of the brightest prospects in Europe. Now, he looks sad, he looks unhappy, he looks restricted. And we might have another Griezmann situation, another Rodri situation, who famously said he left to try and improve his football and play a different way. Mm. He felt he was too restricted by Simeone's system, and that's why he went to City.
It's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because you look at, say, Koke, for example, who could arguably be the player that Spain are building their team around, but it's not happened. You've had the point this season where he's been booed as well.
Yeah.
I mean, have the fans moved on in a way that Simeone hasn't? Because Simeone's talked on various occasions about how they have to change it up, how they have to look to find a new way of playing, but he's not found it. And if you look at the fans over the last couple of seasons, I mean, Koke getting booed this season when he's a club legend, there's no doubt about it. Last season, when Griezmann, there was that game, I'm not sure who it was against, maybe against Levante, where they were winning 1-0. Griezmann breaks out of defence with the ball, and he just turns back on himself and holds it up rather than going anywhere.
Yeah.
It's almost like Stockholm Syndrome. I mean, I would say that Griezmann is particularly susceptible to that because the way he is, people popularly think that was made by Simeone, but he always worked like a dog. Yeah. Because he had to battle to get to the top. He was told he was too small when he was before he arrived at Real Sociedad. When Leon said no thanks,
he had a kind of non-traditional path to where he is, didn't he? That's why.
And he had to work so hard, and you know, he came into the team at Real Sociedad when they were in the Segunda, and you know, I think that's why he was made for Simeone, and Simeone was made for him, or was he? Because has it really helped him develop? It's helped him develop to a certain level, but when we're talking about Barcelona level, they expect something more, something different from him, because that image was amazing when he broke out of defence. turned on the ball and just held it up against, you know, an inferior team when they were winning 1-0 because he was thinking about holding the lead rather than extending it. And the crowd were giving him some shit and he just like put his finger to his lips, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah, it was very, very strange. And don't forget, he was reduced to tears on the field once when they were booing him and they were giving him stick and the players had to go around him and try and get the fans to make sure that they chanted his name, Grizzy, Grizzy. And
yeah, Goodine led that, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. So it was that strange relationship there. I mean, they haven't turned on, it should be said, they haven't turned on Simeone yet. There was a lot of pro-Simeone chants against Leganes. So that hasn't quite happened. And I don't think it will.
I mean, and the thing is, they were appalling against Leganes. It was a terrible, terrible game.
Terrible, really.
It was a really bad performance. I mean, we saw Valencia give Barcelona a bloody nose last week, didn't we? In light of what you're talking about here, and the fact, I mean, some reports are saying that Koke and Trippier may be back in the side this weekend. Yeah. I mean, they won't be fully match fit, presumably, but they're going to play, perhaps. Can they do the same to Real Madrid that Valencia did to Barcelona? Or can they get some kind of positive result?
I don't think so. I think Valencia play with that liberation that Atleti lack. You look at the way that they break on the counter. They've got young Ferran Torres right now, who I think is one of the most exciting players in the Liga. Atleti just don't really have that player who is allowed off the leash. You look at João Felix. I mean, I know he's not going to play this game, but if you look, he's playing that Griezmann role. Exactly the same role. He's dropping deep. He's playing a lot of the game with his back to goal. And I think that's really, really harming his development. So that's kind of an example of what's going on right now with some of their more, what you'd say, fluid attacking players.
I mean, this is where it becomes an issue for Simeone and where they do have to talk about it. Because Lamar not working is an issue because he was so heinously expensive. If medium term, not short term, as we've got at the moment, João Felix doesn't work, they've got a huge problem.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're relying on Angel Correa.
Who they wanted to flog last summer.
Yeah, exactly. Who they were trying to...
Well, they want to flog Lamar as well, don't they?
Yeah.
They, I mean, all of it. They want to flog all of them, apart from João Felix, and that's because they've only just signed him.
It's because they get... They're very... I think if Simeone hasn't polished a player within maybe 6 to 8 months, then, you know, that's it. They're on the verge of going out. And they've got trouble with their wage bill as well. So if they want to bring somebody in, say they want Cavani, somebody else is going to have to be pushed out. And that's kind of... They're just operating... But that's why it took so long to get the Morata deal over the line when they eventually got him. They had to push somebody else out to get him in.
Yeah, I remember you saying that at the time, actually, Andy. All right, staying in Spain... Espanyol have banned 12 supporters after what they described as exhaustive video analysis to identify the individuals involved in racially abusing Athletic Bilbao's Iñaki Williams during a game between the two sides on Saturday. They've passed the details on to police as well in anticipation of a potential criminal case being brought against the assailants. The game wasn't stopped, nor any warnings announced over the stadium's PA system, as it's thought the referee was unaware until told by Athletic captain Iker Muniain full-time. The league's representative didn't hear the abuse, which came in the form of insults and monkey chants. Clearly, we're appalled by the actions of these individuals. But, David, what have you made of the response? And, I mean, you mentioned before we came in, it feels a bit like a sea change in terms of what's happened in the past.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I think you can look at Marca's cover. They put out, "We are all Iñaki Williams." So they wanted to show a solidarity with Iñaki. And yes, okay, they should, but it hasn't happened before. It's very much been when similar incidents have occurred before in Spain, it's very much been a shrug of the shoulders. It's like, okay, it happens, it exists, which is not the right way, because you're never going to stamp anything out if that's your attitude.
So why is it different this time, do you think?
It's interesting to see. I think maybe because there's been so many more high-profile cases around, you know, I think what's gone on in the Premier League, what's gone in Serie A as well. I think people are kind of seeing that, right, enough's enough. Spain itself have got their own very intense political situation at the moment, with the rise of what you call maybe a far right party. So the tensions are extremely high. So I think more people are kind of understanding, shall we say, that how wrong this actually is, which is crazy. We're in 2020, that they should have learned this before.
And he's someone who should have a future with the Spanish national team as well, having been born in the Basque country and being a huge symbol of Athletic as well. That's important, isn't it?
Yeah, he's a massive symbol of Basque culture and also Spanish culture. You know, he's got a brother, Nico, as well, who's coming through, another very, very talented player. He's already said, I'm black, but I'm also a Basque. Because, you know what, he's experienced trouble in the Basque country as well. When he first came through, people didn't like the idea of a black player playing for Athletic Bilbao.
Well, it's a big departure, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, what was he, their first black player or their first black scorer in over a century?
Yeah, scorer. Jonas Romalo was the first to come through.
Yeah.
But he's such a fantastic, fantastic player. So he's very much an idol at the club now. He's a symbol of Athletic now, which is just so far removed from everything that they have had before. He's not just any player.
Have you been impressed with the response from? I mean, because it looks to me like it's. I mean, within a week, these 12 individuals have been banned. Mm-hmm. They said, I think
the RFEF inquiry as well.
There's a wider inquiry expected to happen.
Yeah.
They've identified nine of the supporters as being season ticket holders, and they've had their season tickets revoked, and the other three they've called kind of regular attenders, and they've banned them as well. I mean, it's quite a rapid response, isn't it? I mean, from the outside looking in, it looks like quite a quick response and quite a full one.
In Spanish terms, definitely.
Yeah, okay, right.
We never used to a resolution like this quickly. And again, it's the same in society as well. Like I've said, it's very much been a shrug of the shoulders at such things, which is sad. So yes, it's been impressive to see, and hopefully it continues this way. And hopefully, obviously, the end goal is to completely eradicate this, you know, not just have this and like take their season tickets away. We have to eradicate it completely. And Espanyol fans have got previous, other teams have got previous, and perhaps hasn't, you know, been resolved as such. I remember Inaki was racially abused before against Sporting Gijón when Sporting were at home. And Inaki actually didn't hear at that time. The referee had to point it out. He went over to Inaki and he said, do you do realise you've been racially abused? And Inaki was, no, I didn't hear.
Huh.
The referee had heard it and he goes, he said to Inaki, look, I'm going to stop the game and put an announcement over the PA. And
how long ago was this, David?
That was a few years ago now.
Okay.
I think it's been 2 or 3 years ago now.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was the incident then. And I think what struck me most about this in terms of Inaki after this particular incident against Espanyol, obviously it's horrible, the actual racism itself, but he came off the field and he was so sad.
Mm.
Yeah, he looked really, really downtrodden by it, and really, because I know how much he loves it in Spain, how much he loves it in the Basque country, how proud he is to be Basque, to be Spanish as well. And it was, to see him sad, I think that was what cut it a little bit more deeper, I think.
But there was that incredible reaction in the Copa del Rey match in the week at Tenerife, where all the Tenerife fans applauded in favour of him at the ninth minute. Of course, he wears the number 9 shirt.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Andy, what
and he was really taken aback by that and quite humbled by it.
Yeah, yes.
Well, I think that's important. I mean, people, as the old kind of saying goes, if you don't take sides, I mean, you're on the side of the oppressor. So to proactively show support is really important.
This
more
feels like a moment, though.
More people have to come out.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I have to bring this up, but it's say you saw something on the tube, you know, when sometimes you see videos go around and nobody does anything.
Yeah.
You know, people have to start getting up and stopping this, and that's exactly what they have done in a large number.
What form do you expect the RFEF inquiry to take, and what does that mean to people listening? What would that actually mean?
Well, this is like an FA inquiry, so this is a wider inquiry. So, again, it feels like a departure. I don't think we can presume anything because, as David said, Spain's really not got a great record with dealings with this sort of stuff, and to an extent, it's a societal thing, isn't it? Because you know, you don't see a lot of black people integrated into Spanish society, so it's something that's easy to turn a blind eye to, quite frankly. But it feels like this is different. I think until the inquiries come to its end, we can't make any presumptions, and we can't second guess anything. But the fact that there is an inquiry, that they're not saying, okay, Espanyol have dealt with it, let's leave it at that, which I definitely could have imagined in the past.
Absolutely.
I think it's definitely a positive thing.
Sancho, on final.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites.
So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
In Italy, Torino have had what we can only describe as a horrific week, haven't they? They almost turned it around against Milan in the cup.
So close!
Yeah, but Milan managed to get through to the semi-final of the Coppa Italia, who they'll play against Juventus. Took them extra time to do it, of course. Before that, Torino were lost 7-0 at home to Atalanta. A terrible week for them, all told. It was an absolute field day, this 7, as you'd imagine. I mean, with these kind of results, you always come, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but you always come away thinking, God, that could have been more. And it always could have been more, because they never score every single chance they have. Yet, in this case, Atalanta still scored 7. I mean, their firepower is something else. They've scored 10 more goals than the next highest scoring Serie A team.
In other words, they were top scorers before they even put the 7 on Torino.
Exactly, yeah. And they were higher scorers than Serie A last season, too. Now, a lot's been made about whether they can force their way back into the top four again, and realistically it looks like it'll only be fourth that's available to them. Andy, do you think A, they can last the distance, and if not, who do you think is most likely to take up that fourth spot out of Parma, Cagliari, Roma, or even Milan?
Well, we're assuming after Lazio's recent run, their incredible run.
They're 7 points ahead with a game in hand.
Yeah, they're more likely to be title contenders, though I still feel that's a little bit of a pinch, than they are to be battling out to stay in the top four, because it very much looks like Juventus into Lazio and then the gap.
Yes.
It does feel like it's a real competition between Roma and Atalanta. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I think if you were Roma, you think, well, what really more could we have done this weekend? Because they were brilliant in the derby against Lazio.
I think you know what more they could have done this weekend.
Well, had a goalkeeper who played like he did for the rest of the season rather in that particular game.
Not mistakenly thinking the ball's gone out of play when it hasn't would be good.
Well, he tapped it back into play, Paolo Lopez.
Yeah, exactly.
Chris Smalling almost did his magic and cleared it off the line before Francesco Acerbi smashed it in.
So when I was playing football more regularly, I remember once I broke my neck to keep the ball in play. And ended up, the only thing I could do is hook it back into the penalty area, which the other team scored. And the captain of the team was a lot older than me, and he ran past me, just went, sometimes a corner isn't the worst thing in the world, you know. And that's what I felt like saying to Paolo Lopez at that point.
Well, I don't think anyone needed to say anything to Paolo Lopez, who has been good for them this season, really good, since arriving from Betis. And, you know, I think that work, that game really was testament to the work that Paolo Fonseca has done. You know, bear in mind that this is a guy who's fallen very short at a big club in Porto before. You know, absolutely fell to bits at the end there. And he went and rebuilt his reputation first at Passos and then at Shakhtar Donetsk, where he did an incredible job. And he's been brilliant at Roma, because it has been picking up the pieces and starting again at a big club with expectation. You know, you look at not just the players, but more, I would say, the personalities they lost in De Rossi and Strootman is absolutely huge, really. And Nainggolan, of course. And they've got quite a young team, really, guided by slightly more experienced players like Edin Dzeko, for example. And the performance they gave, they were far superior against Lazio. Lazio, a team who were on an absolute tear. Of course, their 11 straight wins came to an end when they lost in the Coppa Italia, as we talked about last week against Napoli before that. But still, they came into this derby as absolutely favourites. Their fans did the better tifo, it has to be said, as well. So I think it's a sort of mixed feeling from Roma, because to think that Atalanta have caught them up, they're just 1 point behind them now. After the performance that Roma gave, Fonseca wouldn't change anything about the performance. It's just that mistake from Paolo Lopez. And even with that, they still should have won the game.
I was going to say the finishing could have been a little bit better. And, we were discussing it just before, but I was really, really impressed once again with Under. He tore it up on that right wing. The way he played was fantastic, especially in the first half, I thought. And we were saying it's interesting, you know, you talk about the players that they have lost, and who knows, he may be the next one to leave.
there's no doubt about it. I mean, you could argue he wouldn't be in a team at the moment if they hadn't have had that injury to Zaniolo against Juventus a couple of weeks ago that finished his season. But when you consider that Roma have had quite a poor start to 2020, they lost the first two home games, even though the manner in the way that they lost to, ironically, Torino at first, and then Juventus was quite different. I think this shows the grit they've got under Fonseca. The way that they were able to come back and perform that way in the derby. And you know, Lazio would be happy enough with the point in the end. But
yeah.
But to play that way and not be able to further secure yourself in fourth place, I mean, Atalanta were incredible. And just before we go on to Atalanta, the Torino thing, I mean, Walter Mazzarri, he's always fascinating to watch anyway. I remember the first time I saw a Mazzarri team in the flesh, it was Napoli in that amazing Champions League game at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah.
Magnificent.
Still one of the best matches I've ever been to, where, of course, Chelsea went on under Roberto Di Matteo and won in extra time. And Mazzarri turned up wearing, he was on the touchline, wearing a full suit. And you know, one of those like satin bomber jackets?
Yeah.
You know, when Alan Partridge goes to the funeral in that GTX jacket? It was a little bit like that.
So, some Italian menswear stores make those as one item. So like you wear, it's a big long jacket and you open it up and it's just got the little padded bit in the middle. It's not a separate jacket.
Wow.
Right.
It's amazing.
Okay.
And on that Chelsea Napoli thing, didn't Di Matteo only take the job in between legs?
Yes.
I think
Vinicius Parrish was in charge for the loss at San Paolo,
And then he lost heavily to Liverpool in the league, I think. Lost his job. Di Matteo came in, and of course
West Brom.
West Brom?
Always against West Brom. Chelsea managers in that period. West Brom are the Chelsea coach.
Oh, that's right. He lost his Spurs job losing to Liverpool, didn't he?
Yeah.
Anyway, and then Di Matteo comes in and ends up winning the Champions League. But
Mazzarri's there on the touchline anyway, and he just gets so het up during the game that the jacket comes off, chucks it on the touchline, blazer comes off on the touchline, tyre comes down. In the end, he looks like he's played 120
minutes. He's in wrestling.
It's extraordinary.
Down to his pants.
It sounds like Fatih Terim. Remember, the buttons used to be right down. Yeah. That it sounds very much like that.
Yeah, very, very much so.
And Fatih Terim would fight you as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
100%. Oh, yeah. Him against Mazzarri would be a battle.
Let's make it happen.
Yeah, we should.
I mean, it's probably going to be in the Europa League.
I remember what you're talking about. What I'm talking about with the menswear thing is, so in some stores, you get a big, long kind of, it's almost like a peacoat.
Right.
And it's buttons up. When you open it, it's got the added insulation kind of layer underneath. And it looks like you're wearing two jackets, but you're not.
You see, I thought you were talking about a bomber.
Optical illusion.
You were talking about a bomber jacket gilet combo.
No. Let's do another few minutes. Like, this is important stuff.
Yeah, the thing that made me laugh about Mazzarri in this game, they're 5-0 down. They're getting absolutely larruped. It could have been even worse if they didn't have Salvatore Siddiqui. Actually had a pretty good game in goal, it has to be said. I mean, he's one of the best goalkeepers in Serie A. Anyway.
Well, he's always going to get a lot of action in that situation.
And the amazing thing is they've got this young forward, Vincenzo Milico, he's 19 years old. They're 5-0 down. And Mazzarri's right, go on, son, get yourself on. Put hands on your chest.
Yeah.
It's like, what possible good can come out of that?
But it's character building for the young man.
That's exactly the way that Mazzarri would think about it. But yeah, they came back. They played pretty well against Milan in the Coppa Italia this week. Scored the two goals from Brema to turn the game round, the Brazilian forward. And they're winning in stoppage time. And then Calhanoglu rips one in and Milan go on and win it in extra time. Mm. But let's talk about Atalanta, because this is a team, they had their little wobble in Serie A as well. And of course, they're trying to cope with the Champions League. They're going to go on and play Valencia in the Champions League.
I was going to say, one way they could get back into it would be by winning it.
Yeah.
And you'd fancy them against Valencia.
I mean, they were magnificent. And there was no better goal this weekend than Josip Iličić's one, which formed part of his hat-trick.
It was absurd. I think he's an underrated player. I really do.
Well, he's just turned 32. He's definitely going to have his best goal scoring season of his career.
Because I remember first seeing him in Palermo. I mean, he was there as well. He was nice. He was in that lovely Palermo side. And he's something of a throwback. I can imagine being in, you know, one of the old Croatia or Yugoslavia teams alongside Savicevic. Very much of that build. Mm. He's like from a bygone era. He looks like a 90s footballer, I always think.
I think he's got a bit of Chris Waddle about him. He's super left-footed. Doesn't look incredibly athletic, does he? He doesn't look an elite athlete by any stretch of the imagination. But what he can do with that left foot is ridiculous.
And the key thing for Atalanta as well, by the way, and this is something I'm surprised that, people do things different ways, but I'm surprised more teams don't do this. Atalanta share the goals around pretty well. You know, Luis Muriel scores lots of goals. I mean, I think he came off the bench against Torino.
Duvan Zapata's back, which is huge.
He's back and he scores
in the race for fourth.
And Ilicic is having a great Indian summer to his career. So, would you fancy him to go through against Valencia?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. I think
it's a good draw for them, isn't it?
Acceptable in defence. So yeah, I think so.
It's a nice matchup for them, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
And just very quickly before we move on from Italy, have Milan turned a corner now? I mean, they play Juventus in the Coppa Italia semi. That'll be difficult for them. They've got a huge game this weekend against the team around them. What have you made of their upturn in form, and how much of it has been down to Zlatan?
Zlatan has made a difference. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I think we talked about it before, just in the sense of him lifting up the standards of everyone else. I mean, there was this incredible moment after that equaliser in stoppage time by Calhanoglu against Torino in the Coppa Italia quarter. Is the fact that, I mean, him and Rafael Leao, who we talked about before, linked together really nicely. And Leao created this moment where he went down the left wing, very Thierry Henry actually, cut the ball back, and they could have actually got the winner and stopped it going to extra time. It's a great ball from Leao. And Zlatan managed to put it over the top from about 4 yards. And Leao was fuming, and he sort of, as Zlatan hung his head, he sort of karate kicked the advertising board. And initially you're thinking, God, that's a bit brave. Yeah. Like, you know, physically calling out Zlatan like that. But then you think, that shows how far he's come in terms of confidence. I mean, Leao's a terrific young player, but in terms of him like being able to stand up and be confident, this is very new. I think that's had a massive effect.
You said when he first signed for Milan, and Dave, I'd be interested to get your thoughts on this. Andy said when Zlatan first came to Milan, came back to Milan, he said that you have to remember that Zlatan is actually quite underrated when it comes to working with the younger players. And it's kind of hard, that feels almost counterintuitive to think of, because you think of him as being quite a big character. He almost comes across, I don't want to be mean about him, but he always comes across that at his worst that he could be a bit of a bully.
But it's because...
He
plays a character, doesn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Like quite self-consciously as well.
But in your experience of watching him as well when he played in Spain and other places, would you go along with that he's good to have around the dressing room?
I think he's quite... going on what you said, I think he's quite childlike when he wants to be.
Yeah,
he used to look at the fun, I think when he was at Man United, you look at the fun he used to have with the younger players there, and with Bailey, Pogba, and the relationship he had with them. He was very much one of them. He wasn't one of the, he was one of the senior figures. He's such a big player, of course, a big presence, but I think he can come down and understand younger players really well. I think that's underrated.
What do you think is possible for Milan? Because they've got, as I mentioned or I alluded to, they're at home to Verona, who are a team just below them, and then after that they have the Milan derby.
Verona not to be underrated.
Those two games, and then in the middle of next month they play Juventus in the semi-final. They're kind of the real litmus test of how far they've come, right?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I don't see them getting any higher than Europa League, but if they manage Europa League and Coppa Italia, I mean, that would be an incredible result when you bear in mind where they were at halfway point in the season.
Let's go to Leipzig, because their players are in trouble with Ralf Rangnick for flying in a celebrity hairdresser ahead of a match, which they then promptly lost to Eintracht Frankfurt. And I like that Rangnick said, it's not far off the golden steak when commenting on it, referring, of course, to the players visiting Salt Bae, the great Salt Bae restaurant in the winter break.
Timo Werner's not been invited yet.
No, okay, right. Something else Ralf was annoyed about. I mean, Frank Ribery famously went there also, but that's probably none of Ralf's business, because Frank is enjoying semi-retirement in Florence and can probably do what he wants. And he's injured, I think, as well. Would Ralf still have come out and... I've got three questions around this, because they went on to lose the game and they've been having a fantastic season. But my questions are this. Would Ralf still have come out and criticism had Leipzig won the game? Is he seriously connecting the two incidents, or is he making kind of a wider point? And also, and perhaps most importantly, why is it Rangnick making this point and not the manager, Julian Nagelsmann, because Ralph, in his capacity, is just the sporting director of Red Bull?
I would say one, possibly not. Two, global point. And
great.
Three, the reason
he's... This is succinct from you, Anne. This is unlike you.
I know, it's very unlike me.
Is the third one going to be an absolute banger of an answer? It's going to go on for about 5 minutes.
At least.
Yeah, okay, great.
I think the third one is... just because he's someone who's relatively understated, don't mistake that for a lack of gravitas or a lack of power. Bear in mind, in Leipzig's rise, and including last season, he's been coach of the team twice in recent years, and in important seasons as well. So you look at the way they were last season and how they came on last season, preparing themselves for Nagelsmann, and they were excellent for a lot of it. And he was coaching the season they were promoted as well. So this is someone who is not just a remote sporting director, like poking his head out from behind a net curtain. This is someone whose hands...
What an image that is.
I know. I'd be really surprised if they had net curtains at the Red Bull Arena. Yeah. Maybe they should have.
You're making this sound like some kind of pervert, Andy.
I think... It's really important for him to come out and say this, because Nagelsmann had already given the players the bollocking for what they'd done on the pitch. Mm. And now...
Right. So it's kind of like a surround stereo bollocking.
Exactly. It's the full Malcolm Tucker.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that Rangnick is saying, well, actually, what you do on the pitch is not my business anymore. Your attitude off it and the philosophy of the club is very much my business. Mm. It made me think of Beck. Because Beck has a flying celebrity hairdresser. That always seemed really unlikely to me.
A lot of hip hop artists do as well. Did you reckon that Ralph just basically is making the point that next time you fly on a celebrity hairdresser, make sure he's a Red Bull sponsored athlete and there'll be no problem?
Maybe he didn't get his hair cut as well. Maybe he wasn't invited to the haircut.
It's kind of the sort of thing Red Bull would sponsor a celebrity hairdresser. It's the kind of thing they would do. So if you can get the official signed off Red Bull one, it'd be fine.
But I think you'd have to have a very specific haircut with. Like something that's an energy drink.
It'd be wacky.
It'd have to be all a sort Pogba. Of like tram lines and like Nike like ticks and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Nike ticks. Yeah. There's a throwback.
Yeah. Why not? Eh?
I used to have a little line design on my hair as a kid.
Yeah, I did as well. Yeah. Some track lines. And never had a Nike tick though.
No.
There used to be somebody in my school who had
never pay you enough.
A Nike tick with a, and it was dyed red.
Really?
Which was, yeah.
And the people at Nike reminded me to tell you that it's a swoosh, not a tick.
Oh.
Yeah.
There you go.
Is that fair?
Okay, fair enough.
What do you make of this incident, David?
Yeah, I think it's been tactical in terms of how Rangnick has done the, you know, has emphasised on the whole hairdressing situation and given his, you could call it the hairdryer treatment. Yeah, and leaving Nagelsmann to actually talk about what happened on the field. I think that's really clever. I don't think that's just happened by chance. And again, I think, you know, I know you said Rangnick's involved very directly with the players, but I think if Nagelsmann had done it, it might have been repercussions, I think, personally with the players who he sees probably a lot more, has more closer relationships with. So yeah, I think it's been well done. And for what it's worth, I would agree. I think it feels a bit silly flying a hairdresser in.
Especially if you go on to lose the game. But they've got a big game this week. They play Mönchengladbach at home, first versus third.
They've got two absolutely huge games because they're playing Borussia Mönchengladbach on Saturday in the late game. And then the following Sunday, they're going to Bayern. So it does need to be a moment where they say, look, lads, are we doing this or are we not doing this? And that's exactly what Nagelsmann said after the game against Eintracht Frankfurt. And Eintracht Frankfurt, who've had a difficult first half of the season. Of course, they lost Rebic, Jovic and Haller, which was always going to be tough to come back
after
from.
After the painful loss of Kovac as well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it's taken them a long time to get that far. Well, of course, it was a big metamorphosis after Kovac, who was a huge part of that setup, went and Adi Hütter took over. But it's an interesting second season for Adi Hütter. And the things that have worked for them, and we'll come back to Leipzig in a minute, is the fact that David Abraham's come back after that really quite unusual body charge on Christian Streich that saw him get suspended for a number of weeks.
Poor old Christian Streich. I felt sorry for him.
He's still on the floor from
probably
that,
is.
Actually.
Absolutely needless.
And the big one
it's up
is,
there with Jeremy Mathews.
Yeah. That's the
that's a different scale. That's a different scale.
That's the late challenge of the season.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that the fact that Kevin Trapp is back is absolutely enormous as well. Mm. Because the drop-off between him and Ronno and Wietveld, the reserve goalkeepers, is absolutely enormous. That was one of their biggest problems in the first half of the season, not having a goalkeeper really worthy of the name in that first part of the season. So Trapp coming back in 2020 has been enormous. They've won both games since they've been back. But the unevenness of this performance by Leipzig at Commerzbank Arena was really interesting, I thought, because in the previous game against Union, they'd been terrible in the first half and then come back and absolutely blaze them in the second half. Mm. But it was desire rather than any sort of tactical change from Nagelsmann that did that. I mean, he was giving the players their head to sort it out. And really, the way that Timo Werner played, especially in the second half of that Union game, was, you know, I'm going to win this with my individual brilliance. And a lot of other players, I think, responded to that as well.
I love it when a coach does the full Graham Taylor at half time. You've got us into this fucking mess. Now you can get us out of it.
He probably said exactly that. And then the other way round against Frankfurt. I mean, in the first half at Frankfurt, Leipzig had 12 shots. Frankfurt had one.
Mm.
And yet they go on, and I think I was knocked a bit sideways by the sheer brilliance of Almami Touré's goal, which was an incredible hit from way out. But after that, they didn't really seem like they knew what to do. Like they went for the equaliser a bit too quickly, and Eintracht were very, very happy keeping them at arm's length. They were nicely set when they were 1-0 up. It was an error from Ademola Lookman, although it was just generally defensively a bit of a mess, that added to the second goal, which was scored by Kostic in stoppage time. But the way that they were kept at arm's length by Eintracht so easily, that would concern you if you were Nagelsmann. He came out with this amazing quote afterwards. He said, we've got to figure out whether we want to climb to the summit of the mountain or whether we want to stop just below the summit of the mountain, take some nice pictures and have a coffee.
Mm. Love that quote. I think Danny Olmo might be a big help, by the way.
Huge.
In terms of in games like that where teams are happy to sit back against them. They've got so many attacking options, but I think Olmo provides something a little bit different.
What are they getting with Olmo, and what's it say about Leipzig that they're actually able to make a signing like this? A guy who was, you know, linked with Atleti and other La Liga teams not very long ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a fantastic signing, and I think the right move in his career. He's done so well in Croatia. Such a brave move to go over there as a teenager to develop as he has. I think he gives Nagelsmann flexibility. He can play anywhere along that advanced, you know, attacking midfield line. He can even play up front as a second striker if you really want to use him as that. So yeah, I think certainly that's why you bring up that game where teams will be happy to sit back. They know how Leipzig play. Almost just good at just maybe unlocking defences. He's got that little Iniesta ability about him where he can just pick the ball up, drive at teams, and just pulls a few people out of position, gets a few people unnerved, and he'll have so many options around him as well.
And he'll get that freedom, won't he, in the Leipzig 4-2-2-2 that they play with sometimes as well. So hopefully we'll see a lot of him.
Well, why don't we explore a bit more about Danny Olmo then? Mm. Because, I mean, I'm by no means a tactical expert, as regular listeners will know, but I've always been led to believe if you've got a team who's sitting back deep against you need to move the ball side to side quickly, you perhaps want a sort of deep line playmaker to try and open the door. Mm-hmm. What is it about Danny Olmo particularly that you think can help them?
I think it's just how he carries the ball. I mean, he can take up wide positions as well, so he can stretch the field out and then cut inside. He loves cutting inside, but I think as he's matured, as he's become more of a key player with Zagreb, he has now morphed into what you're going to see an attacking midfielder, somebody who's got good vision, who can see what's going on ahead of him, but so he can play in that final third. And again, it's his unpredictability, I think, in his box of skills that he has is quite incredible.
And what a mature, I mean, I don't know the player well, but what a mature move to go somewhere that's well known as developing young players and saying, you know what, I'm going to go over there and learn a bit more about the game and do it that way. Is that how it worked? Because if so, that's a fantastically mature move for a young kid.
Well, it's a good deal for him, and it's a good deal for Zdravko Mamic, allegedly.
Okay, fine. All right, let's talk a bit about confirmed transfers.
We only talk about confirmed transfers on this show because otherwise it can blow up in your face fairly quickly.
Worst possible week for it to blow up in your face.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. This is our last show before the transfer window shuts. And the one I'm most excited about, I'll have to be honest, is Hatem Ben Arfa signing for Real Valladolid on a six-month deal.
Yes.
Okay. The 32-year-old was last seen blowing out candles on a cake commemorating a full year since he played a game for PSG before an elongated cameo at Rennes where he won the Coupe de France. The really interesting thing about this transfer, though, is the apparently it was the original Ronaldo, majority owner at the club, that proved to be the main draw for Ben Arfa to sign. As Football Ramble Daily social media man Charlie said at the time, a man who younger fans don't pay enough respect to as potentially the greatest footballer of any generation, and Ronaldo. Oh. What have you made of this move, David?
I think it's an outstanding move. It's really exciting.
We just want to see him playing,
yeah,
don't we?
Yeah. He's been such a big miss, and when he is, you know, on his game, he's very, very difficult to stop. I think if you look when he was at Newcastle, he had such a head of steam, and then he suffered that. Was it De Jong? Nigel De Jong?
Yeah.
And then he did his ACL. And if you look at his form before then, he just looked settled. He was happy. I know that idolised him in Newcastle. And yeah, he was on the verge of something big. And then obviously the whole, this bizarre situation at PSG occurred. Mm. But I think via the lead, he'll do really well. They've got nobody like him. I mean, not many teams have a player like Ben Arfa.
They struggle for goals this season?
Big struggle for Glades. They're a very, very negative side.
They draw with them,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. They love a draw. 0-0 is a good result for them. And I think Ben Arfa just provides something a little bit, when they do break out, that he provides something a little bit different. He can maybe provide that little dribble, that final pass, and I think that'll be important for them in the long run.
What he won't be providing is a back post header, though, right? As we found out from his presentation.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. As you do, you come on the pitch, you pose for the cameras, you do a few kick-ups, a few skills, and one of the photographers just said to Ben Arfa, he goes, oh, can you just do a few little, you know, just a seal sort of keepy-ups on your head? And he goes, oh, I don't do that anymore. And then he goes, I like my hair too much right now. I mean, that is great.
Committed to the cause.
If you didn't love Hatem Ben Arfa already, it makes you love him more.
It's all about personal brand, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah. It seems like it is. I mean, he's 32 now. La Liga is a competitive division. I mean, he's in a bit of a fight at Valladolid. Is he going to be able to make a difference, though, at his age? He's not played a huge amount of football.
I think so, because he wants to impress his idol. He said himself he came to Valladolid because Ronaldo was there. Mm-hmm. Ronaldo called him personally. To get the deal, you know, because I think there was a few clubs looking at him, as there always is, you know, if a player like that's available. So I think he could do. I'm not too sure whether he'll keep them up, but it's going to be interesting. I think that's the main thing.
Do you think, like, part of the reason that people are excited about him in Spain is because, and I realise they're different players, because Fekir represents more of a goal scoring threat.
Yeah.
But with Fekir, we have seen a Lyon Academy produced slalomer do some good stuff in La Liga this season, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. We've got Benzema, Fekir, you know. Maybe we need Nasri through next. Has anybody got Sami and Nasri's number? Could Levante maybe get him in?
And he's almost certainly got Sami and Nasri's number.
He's just, help me out here. Yeah. I'm stuck with company and Anderlecht.
Please get it set up, you know.
I'd love to have heard Ben Arfa pick up the phone to Ronaldo. It would have been brilliant. He probably would have done the old, oh, shut up, and just hung up. not believed it was him. But that's great that Ronaldo can actually have a positive impact. I mean, obviously, if Ben Arfa's on record as saying that's the reason he's gone there, then great news. I mean, it's great news for Valladolid fans. For sure, they don't score goals. I mean, I just checked, and only Leganés have scored fewer goals than them this season. So.
I love these random moves. It reminds me when Kevin Prince bought and just rocked up at Las Palmas a few years ago.
He came
out of nowhere.
By the way, he went to Barcelona as well.
Which is
mad.
Fair to him,
absolutely mad.
Yeah, well, actually, that was the thing, wasn't it? When Quique Setién signed, I mean, quite a few Spanish and Catalan tweeters tweeted from the board that brought you Kevin Prince-Boateng to Barcelona.
Yeah. What about Steven Bergwijn then, who signed for Spurs on a 4.5-year deal for a reported £27 million? Andy, what can Spurs and Premier League fans, I guess, expect from him?
Well, I think the interesting thing is, my immediate thought is, why does Spurs want another wide player? But I always think it's important to talk to people who go and watch teams regularly, fans of teams, because they'll always see it from a different perspective than you do, even if you know the club and the team pretty well. And I was speaking to Lord Ramble about this, actually, and he was saying, well, actually, he's totally the sort of player that Spurs want. Because not just a wide player who can score goals, but one who can like function with Harry Kane once Harry Kane comes back. I think the notable thing about Bergwijn, and apparently his form's dropped off a little bit this season, PSV viewers tell me.
He had his head turned though, right?
Yeah.
He knew he was making the move. He didn't leave PSV without permission to go and talk to Spurs.
Yeah, I mean, he's been too good for the Eredivisie for a while.
Right.
And he's someone who is quick, who can find space, who can generally cut in and score goals, as well as set them up. I think the interesting thing about him is if you look at going back in recent weeks, PSV are playing him as a centre forward a lot.
Right.
And he can still create from that centre forward position, which I think is very notable. So ideally, a player for them who can stand in for Harry Kane but not be superfluous once Harry Kane comes back is a pretty good deal, no? Mm.
I think they essentially want to account for Lucas's drop-off in form.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to play that similar role they've tried him, and that's very interesting that he's played that centre-forward role. And who knows, I think Spurs might still bring in that Hulk and centre-forward that they want.
It's all sorts of rumours.
People will know by now.
Yeah.
they're listening to it.
Yeah, they will. But there was a lot of rumours last night going around that someone must have been spotted at Spurs, some big-name player, but no one would name who it was.
Oh, so it wasn't Piontek then?
Probably all nonsense.
Hey.
Well, no, exactly. Well, he is kind of literally a big name, particularly his first name. Quite long, but I mean, not really a big name on the pitch. What about Nabil Bentaleb? I mean, Newcastle from Schalke on loan, famously fell foul of Mauricio Pochettino's no dickheads policy at Spurs. What will he bring?
It turns out Schalke have got a no dickheads policy.
I was about to say, what will he bring to this Newcastle team, and is he officially no longer a dickhead?
Well, we don't know because he hasn't played for a while. Yeah. I think he's a
dickhead.
We're gonna find out. I mean, that's not necessarily an impediment to a good career at Newcastle United, as we all know.
Ben Arthur again.
Hey,
back to Ben Arthur.
I think it's all about bringing the threads together, Luke.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. Yeah. But we'll be on to Adel Taarabt next.
I think the interesting thing about Bentaleb is when he first arrived at Schalke, here was a guy who was made a cornerstone of the team, and he did a pretty good job as well. Who was not just given the job of making it all tick over in midfield, which he did really well for Spurs for a bit. And I think people can forget that, how good he was for Spurs for a while. But, you know, they let him take penalties and sort of lead from the front. So that's why it made it all the more surprising, really, when it went south. And he's not really had a look in under David Wagner. I think the stylistic changes has had an effect on that as well. I really like Bentaleb as a player. I think, in terms of what Newcastle are lacking, I would have liked to see them get more of an athlete in midfield. But that's not to say it couldn't be very helpful for them.
I actually thought the opposite, you know. I thought this is the sort of player that they could do with. Because everybody in that midfield that you look is very much energy, passion, hard work. They just need somebody just to come in and calm things down.
Well, no one else in that midfield can keep the ball.
Exactly, and that's why I think he'd be good. And also, they're relying more on Almiron as weeks go by. Yeah. So if he can do something in the final third as well, then... Mm.
Can I just chuck something in there and just say, for the record, Jonjo Shelvey can do that, he just doesn't.
Yeah.
He just refuses to, regularly.
Is he in the dickhead's policy?
Though? Where does
he stand there?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You have to ask him.
He can do one pass very well. Yeah. I mean, the way he does that pass is magnificent, but it is one pass.
So you're kind of earmarking him out as a kind of ersatz Charlie Adam, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Not
such a bad thing.
And
no?
Hollywood passes.
I can't go on to games of the week without just briefly mentioning that it was absolutely delicious for anyone who's watched him over the last however many years to see Christian Eriksen. I think his first touch for Inter was a free kick from a wide position, which hit the first man. You're welcome, Inter. Enjoy it.
Everyone's still thinking about the video in the Scala, though. So who cares?
That's true. That was that dream thing with the violins and everything. They're getting more and more up their own arses, these football clubs, I'm telling you. Aren't they? I mean, you had the Sanchez with the piano at Old Trafford.
Why can't we just wind it back to when you had De Laurentiis bringing out Gökhan İnler, wasn't it? And he came out with a Napoli shirt on, the lion's head. He's just removed. He's like, I'd like to introduce our new signing. He removes the lion's head and it's Gökhan İnler.
Great. And no one knew it was him.
No.
That's brilliant. That's up there with Brian Robson being announced as player manager of Middlesbrough with shorts, socks and football boots and a shirt, tie and blazer on top.
Absolutely.
Get a man that can do you both. That's all I'm going to say. All right, games of the week. Last week, I picked out the Rome Derby. It was 1-1, as we've already mentioned, including an absolute comedy equaliser for Acerbi after a mix-up at the back for Roma. Andy, you had Napoli 2, Juventus 1. Lovely turn-up for the books at the San Paolo, particularly for fans of Inter.
Yeah, and Lorenzo Insigne absolutely on fire again. He got the winner against Lazio. It was his shot that was charged down for Zielinski to open the scoring. Then he scored the second with a really nice volley. And just at this situation that Napoli were in, they needed Lorenzo Insigne to come up big, and he has been.
He did,
you know, you think about the tackle he made to run the ball out late on in that Lazio game, and he was just like revving up the crowd like he'd scored, and it's just absolutely fantastic. And he did, after he scored what turned out to be the winner against Juventus, he did the full Maradona thing, didn't he, of running out onto the running track, being submerged by ball boys, loads of people in Napoli gear who don't really know what they're doing there, all that sort of stuff, and giving the heart to the crowd with his hands and that sort of stuff is brilliant. And I have to say, after the way that Maurizio Sarri behaved in the build-up, it was quite nice to see it blow up in his face, wasn't it?
Great. And I also don't understand, and this is going to sound like a dig at West Ham, and it kind of is, but I want to contextualise it. Napoli, they don't have problems generating an atmosphere at the San Paolo. I mean, I've been there, and the atmosphere is incredible. Yet all the problems that West Ham Stadium seems to have, Napoli on paper has, added stuff like a running track and all sorts, and a big pit between the fans and the pitch. So what's the difference?
Can they all squeeze in on the top deck at the Olympic Stadium?
I'm not sure, but they do.
Is there a top deck?
In Napoli they do, don't they? They all stand up there.
Yeah, best €12 you'll ever spend.
Yeah, so I don't know what the difference is. Maybe
they need the stadium announcer.
Yeah, maybe they do. Maybe they do, yeah.
No, no. Oh, yeah, Decibel.
Yeah.
Is that his name?
Yeah.
That's brilliant. Decibel, what a great name. Yeah. And last week had Bayern 5, Schalke 0, which we were trying to sort of make out to be the Alex Neubel derby, but he didn't feature. Obviously, he stayed away.
No, that's right. But Schubert actually made an excellent case for Neubel to play in future games.
Yeah.
By playing so terribly.
Yeah. Well, it can happen. This week, I'm going to go for the Madrid derby, Saturday at 3 o'clock. You guys have already heard all about why, thanks to David and Andy. But David, why don't you tell us what yours is and really sell it into us?
Yeah, it's going to be one for the purists. It's Athletic Bilbao versus Getafe. It's on Sunday, 3 p.m. I don't think there's going to be a lot of goals, but there's going to be a lot of...
I said sell it in, David.
There's going to be a lot of there's going to be a lot of long balls. There's going to be a lot of elbows. There's going to be a lot of dickheads.
Really? So, okay. There we go. Perfect. If that's your persuasion.
Yeah, great.
I'll definitely be watching it then. That's the case.
This is my sell. If you are a fan of shithousery, which you should be, this is your game for you. This is the game.
Actually, we didn't, when we were talking about Atletico earlier, we didn't ask you about Cuellar and his reverse Eden Hazard. The Leganés goalkeeper.
Tell us about this.
In that game, did we?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Yeah, he took time wasting to a whole new level,
which he does on a weekly basis anyway.
Yeah. Just
but this was special.
Yeah, you're absolutely. If there was the shithousery ex that you know team, he would be the goalkeeper. He'd be the first name on the team sheet, quite frankly. Anyway, he was trying to waste time. The ball boy gave him the ball really, really quick. Cuellar then decided to throw the ball back at the ball boy.
Right.
But then the ball boy decided to do again, and then Cuellar decided to basically step up to the ball boy.
Did he get booked?
He got sent off.
He got sent off for it.
The ball boy pushed him, and then he took a dive.
Yeah.
And Laoth thought, "Well, I'm not stomaching this anymore. I'm going to send you off." It took about 4 minutes to get off the pitch.
Didn't he? He went down again. He said something to. I mean, Alvaro Morata is known as.
Oh, this is in the Atletico game.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah, I saw this. Yeah,
Alvaro
yeah.
Morata is known as the guy that you'd want to take. You know, you'd want your daughter to bring home. And Cuellar somehow said something to him and got a massive rouser. I've never seen Morata so, you know, unhappy, angry.
Yeah. Well, Robbie Savage did that to Dion Dublin once. Normally mild mannered Dion Dublin. So you never know. What people can push buttons, man.
I want to know what's said.
Maybe
Cuellar could have been anything.
Alvaro's just trying to fill the Diego Costa shaped hole in the Atletico.
That's doing a good job of it.
Yeah. All right. So for fans of elbows, long balls, and no goals, Sunday, 3 o'clock, Athletic Bilbao v Getafe.
Get it done. You won't be disappointed.
Great. All right. Andy.
You know what? I'm going to go to southwestern France on Sunday night, 8 p.m. Marseille go to Bordeaux with a 13-match unbeaten run. They also go to a city to face a team they've not won away to since October 1977.
Is that you when you were born?
Only just a bit.
Yeah, great. So
I was one.
You were born. I was going to say, because it might not have happened in your lifetime, which is crazy.
No.
Because you're old, but just because it's an interesting thing.
Oh, yeah. You made a mess of this, haven't you? I'll tell you who was 2 months off being born. Emmanuel Macron.
There we go. Oh. That's a good link. And do we think Bordeaux could keep up that record? It's very difficult to think of things to say about Bordeaux.
Yeah, well, they won at Nantes last week after...
But they're like rock 10th, aren't they? Just a mid-table team.
Yeah, they could clearly do with a goal scorer. That could really work for them. And that's what Paulo Sousa has been looking for the whole time. Well, since he did Ramble Meets in the summer, pretty much.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting game last week between Bordeaux and... Nantes, because it was kind of the Emiliano Sala derby. Of course, it represented a year or the nearest to it when Nantes were playing at home since the death of Emiliano Sala. So they wore this Argentina themed home strip, and the atmosphere was absolutely wonderful. And it was fitting that they played for Bordeaux as well, because that's where he started out in France. So there's a lot of love for Sala there as well. And it's a game that was still pretty keenly contested, and that Bordeaux managed to take right at the end with Jimmy Briand scoring the winner. So I think it's interesting from their perspective, Marseille, after they got past their little wobble in the league against Angers by beating Strasbourg in the Coupe de France this week. And we were talking about great goals earlier with Jozy Pilicic. Bruno Sarr, who'd come back into the match, who'd come back into the team after suspension, scored an incredible goal, a Brazilian style goal, as they're calling it in France, where he came in from right back, dribbled around a load of players and smashed it in the corner with his left foot. And so, interestingly, the three goals against Strasbourg were scored by Bounassar, Dimitri Payet, penalty, and Boubacar Camara, the three players who were suspended against Angers when they drew 0-0 on Friday night, and they missed them so badly. So they'll be back, and it gives Marseille an enormous chance of trying to change that really dismal record at Bordeaux.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.